Get a job.
Work hard.
And one day you can retire and do the things you want.
That's the typical formula for daily life in the modern world.
And it works for lots of people. This kind of life is perfect.
But it's not for us. And I'm guessing that it's not for you either.
I'm David Allan Patali.
And I'm Carmen Allan Patali. And together we run the content company Red Platypus.
I'm also a published fiction author.
And we have two young daughters who keep us on our toes.
We've both said no to well-paid jobs in favour of pursuing our creative paths. And we want to walk them with you.
Freelancer, digital nomad, artist, creative, self-employed. Whatever you want to call it, if you work for yourself and want to keep it that way, or want to be free from the 9-to-5 and don't know where to start, we want to help.
We're going on a journey to speak to committed creatives, people who are all in, who have made highly successful businesses out of their creativity, and ask them how they do it while retaining the magic.
Because while we think inspiration is good, we've come to learn that process is vital.
Welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast, your toolkit for the creative life you want.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative. This week on the Committed Creative Podcast, I chat with Karen Chaston. Karen suffered the ultimate heartbreaking loss when she found her son dead in her backyard one morning. This loss completely changed the trajectory of Karen's life. She quit her job as a high-powered chief financial officer as she worked through her grief. She's now a best-selling international author, and she helps other people come to terms with loss, coaching them on how they can move forward in life. Just a warning, this podcast contains some emotional stories about loss, so if you feel you're not in the right space to listen about that right now, come back another time. Let's dive into the episode. Wow, welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast. It's so great to have you on.
Thank you. It's so great to be here, Carmen.
So maybe just to start with, you could tell us a little bit about your story. I know it's quite a moving one, and I'd love for you to share it with us and our listeners.
Oh, thank you. I'll try and keep it brief, but it's a bit hard to at times. But so back in 2011, I was a CFO of a publicly listed company living in Sydney, loving life, probably wasn't as healthy as I could be mentally, emotionally, or physically. But, you know, life was going along really well. And as a CFO of a publicly listed company, you know, I was like, what do you expect? You're earning that salary, you got to work those hours, and, you know, sometimes the other areas of your life sort of have to take a back burner. And then on the 10th of July 2011, my husband and I woke up thinking we were going to have a lazy Sunday at home. Though within minutes, we were running out the back door, looking at our 27-year-old son, Dan, lying there in the fetal position. We thought he was alive. But unfortunately, a few moments later when the paramedics walked in, they just took one look at him and then they just came straight to me and they just said those words that no mother, no parent ever wants to hear. I'm sorry, Karen. And they said, no, sorry, madam. He is dead, probably has been for several hours, which was a huge shock. He was our youngest son by a minute. He was a twin and he had an older brother who was 2.5 years older and a half sister who was 10 years older. So at the time, I didn't know what to do. No one knows what to do when that happens. So I did what most of us, you know, are told to do. Keep busy, give it time, everything will be all right. So I did that. I went back to work the day after Dan's funeral and I continued working harder, eating more, drinking more, and just carrying on with life, just avoiding everything that was happening and, you know, never looking at that empty chair. Then about 15 months after that, the company I was working for was merging with another. And during that process, they said to me, Karen, you're not going to be CFO in the new company, but you're going to be doing everything that you're doing now plus more. And we'd really love for you to come with us. And I just went, yeah, that sounds okay. Who cares what a title is? Until they gave me my package, my contract. And I quickly flicked to the salary and I went, I can't do this job part-time. And they're going, not funny. You know, it's a full-time position. I said, but this salary, it's two-thirds of what I'm currently on. And then, you know, you got the whole spiel. Well, we've, you know, gone to market and that's what it's worth and yada, yada, yada. And I was angry for about 2 days. And then the best thing happened. I actually started to look at my life and really deep dive into who I was. And I really started to realize that you're not as happy as what you think you are. You're wasting all of this money just to get through the day. You're working way too much. Your relationships are just there. They're not fantastic. Your health certainly needs a big overhaul. And I just really, I just double checked that I'd get redundancy, and I did. And then I said no, and they were all shocked. And I just thought it was the greatest gift they can ever give to anyone else. So I went on this journey to becoming my own best friend, where I really did deep dive into me mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And from there, I then deep dived into my relationships and every single area of my life. And during that process, I became a life coach. I went on this journey that I love to call the journey to becoming my own best friend, because let's face it, we really do look after our best friends. You know, we talk to them nicely. We're always there for them and we understand where they are and where they're going. But sometimes we're not our own best friend, especially when you look at the way we talk to ourselves. So during that process, I was so blessed to have so many guides come into my life where I could then create the Chasten Center. I could deep dive into loss and find that loving way to move beyond any kind of loss and create your everyday better life. And that's me in a nutshell.
Oof, wow.
I know.
What a story. I mean, yeah. You went from tragedy to really changing. It really affected your whole life, changed the complete course of your life. And I'm curious how the people around you reacted. Like, how did people react when you went back to work the day after your son's funeral?
I guess they expected it, a lot of them. They all, you know, said don't. And I'm like, there's no point in me being at home. You know, I don't want to just sit around and contemplate it. But the funny thing about it is in my five-step, the gift of loss process, which I would like to explain why it's called the gift of loss. The gift is not in the loss event that has happened. Like, there was no gift in Dan dying. There is no gift in possibly having a divorce or a, you know, a redundancy, any of the 40 plus different loss events. The gift comes in who you become after this event. It's like there's a line in the sand and you know that you're not going to be the same person moving forward because of this loss. And that's where the gift comes. And we all have a choice on who we become after any tragic loss event. I've met many people 20 years on after losing a child who still can't even mention their name. And that's their choice, but there's no gift in that. So I firmly believe that Dan is traveling with me. I give him credit. He is the co-founder of the Chasten Center. He really is deep into all of my books, deep into all of my programs, because I know he is walking beside me. And in a way, it's the way that he lives on. And his death wasn't just this horrible, tragic event, if that makes sense.
Mm. Did they ever determine his cause of death?
Yeah, a long time after. And this might freak a few of your listeners out or viewers out. So at the autopsy the next day, he had gone out and he had drunk way too much, but that wasn't the cause of death. So he'd come home. For some reason, he'd left his key at home. He called his girlfriend. They lived under our house, not in a Harry Potter cupboard, but in a nice granny flat underneath. So they lived under there, and for some reason, I don't know why, but anyway, she put the key out for him. I don't know why she didn't leave the back door open. And when he bent down to pick it up, he fell over and everything shook up inside him. But they said that his lungs at the autopsy the next day were so bad that if he had smoked full on for, say, 10, 12 years, remember he was only 27, he couldn't have done a quarter of the damage to what the lungs were like. But then a few years later, probably I think it was around 2014. Yeah, 2014. I had a three-way conversation with him with a friend of mine who lives in Atlanta, Georgia. She was actually proofreading my book, Beyond a Mother's Worst Nightmare. And she messaged me and she said, Karen, I've been told to stop reading it. And I said, by who? And she said, Dan. And I said, oh, wow. And she said, he wants to have a three-way conversation with you.
And was she a medium, your friend?
Well, I knew she read energy. Mm. I didn't know she did that. And I said to her, I didn't know you did that. And she goes, yeah. If you read energy, you can always do that. And I went, okay, cool. So we, after setting up a few ground.
At this point in the episode, we totally lost connection on Zoom and Karen couldn't continue with her story. So that's why there's this awkward pause in the podcast.
Thank you for your understanding. So maybe, yeah, just go from where you were talking about your friend contacted you and told you.
No, I can't talk. I can't share that now. He doesn't want me to.
No? Okay, that's fine. Moving on.
Yeah. So I'll just say that his lungs failed him.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us about your life coaching now. So what, I know you work with people who are going through grief. What is the process that you undertake with your clients?
Okay. So let's clarify that it's not just grief, okay, because there are over 40 different loss events that can affect our lives. And a lot of us think loss, death of a loved one, and that certainly is one of the major ones and one of the most, you know, emotional and trauma causing loss. But there are, as I said, over 40s, you know, things like a divorce, a separation, your job loss, your health, your wealth, your pets. And if we look back at the last, you know, few years, a lot of those minor ones have come to the forefront. Loss of freedom, choice, status, identity, changing work conditions, recreational and social activities. So what I do is I help, and I'm not a grief counsellor. So it's really clear that people understand that. I am a life coach. So what I have done is I have deep dived into loss, and I have deep dived into the way that we have dealt with loss over for centuries. And to be quite honest, most of us have a lack of loss intelligence. We don't want to think about it. We don't want to talk about it. Very few of us know even what to say when loss comes to visit either us or, you know, our family or our friends. And that in itself causes us to go into avoidance, suffering in silence, and having it affect all areas of our lives, especially our health, our relationships, and our professional life. So what I do is I walk them through a five-step process, which I have created. And as I said earlier, I have called it the gift of loss because it is a journey that you are taking at the start of you becoming this new person. You are not going to be the same person to who you were before this event happened. All we have to do is look back at who we've all become since, you know, early 2020. We're all completely different. We've all have been on a loss journey. Together, we've all done it, walked it probably differently, depending on where we are and what our beliefs are and everything. So what I do is the first step, and it's a five-step process. So the first step is to stop, right? And it's quite interesting that that's what we all had to do, you know, over the last couple of years was stop. And look what happened when we all stopped. You know, if you look at the world, how quickly did the world heal? You know, it was amazing watching the world heal so quickly. When we all got out of the way, it was like Mother Gaia said, okay, I'm going to put you all into stop and I'll fix myself because you guys are just making it worse. And then, of course, you know, when we start to stop, we start to look within ourselves and we start to find, you know, what does this mean for us now? We start to ask those meaningful questions. And what I've found is the quality of your life will always come down to the quality of the questions you are asking yourself. So when you stop, you start to say things like, what does this mean for me now? What does this mean for me moving forward? and you really start to deep dive into it. And of course, you come to acceptance very quickly because you accept what is happening, not saying that you condone it and you are thrilled about it, but through acceptance, you realize that this too shall pass, but I am now on a different road and I am moving forward. And it's the acceptance of that. It's also the acceptance and understanding that in every relationship, we have three aspects. And the first aspect is the physical, where we, the things we do, the things we say, the way we touch each other, the way we hang out together. Then the next one is the emotional. And that's all encompassing of the good, the bad, the glad, and the sad. And then the third one is that spiritual connection. And it's that intangible thing that we know that we're connected to this person, place, or thing. We're just not sure why we are so connected. So when we accept and realize that when loss comes to us in any of its forms, it is only the physical relationship that has ended. The emotional and the spiritual will live on forever. It is the emotional relationship that is causing us all that pain and all that suffering. And that's when brings us, so the first step was to stop, the second step was to accept, and then that brings it to that third step, which is to identify. And that's when we really deep dive into the relationship. And we identify so many things about it. We look at our combined hopes, dreams, and aspirations. And we have a list of them and we look at them and we go, right, these are not going to be achieved now. They can be achieved differently, but not as we had planned. So you've got to identify them because you want to be able to still decide which of those you want to continue with and run with. And, you know, it was a goal of yours. It was a big hope and a dream. So you want to still get there. You also want to identify in the relationship things that you want to apologize for, things you want to forgive, and things you want to acknowledge. Because those are the three things that are causing us that emotional upheaval. Because we may have done or said things that we now regret. We may have, you know, always blamed them for something, whereas in reality there's two people in every relationship and there's two people that make it and there's two people that break it for whatever reason. So the more we identify everything about this relationship, the more we can come up with these things that we want to apologize for, the things we want to forgive and the things we want to acknowledge, which brings us to the fifth step, which is all about completion. Now, we're completing the emotional relationship because, remember, the emotional and the spiritual will live on forever. So the more we identify these emotional things that are stirring within inside us, the easier it is for us to heal them. And that's how we complete the emotional. So what we're completing is that emotional upheaval. We're not saying the relationship is over forever. No, it will continue on, but you'll have sadness. You won't have grief and suffering because you've identified it and done this practice, which is a really beautiful practice. And then the fifth step is the last step, which is the pivot step. And that's where we deep dive into every single area of your life. And in the Chaser Model Center, we have 9 areas of life. And I purposely wanted 9. Because as an accountant, you know, as a numbers person, I understand numbers. I understand the energy of numbers. And 9 is all about completion. It's the end of a cycle. It's important that we deep dive into those 9 areas of life and we figure out, right, this is where I am now and this is where I want to be. So what are those action steps that are required for me to go from where I am now to where I want to be? And then you take those action steps in all areas of your life. And it's really important. It's such a beautiful way to process any kind of loss because you are realizing that you're completing that relationship and then you're creating that better everyday life, which is exactly what we all want. You know, it gives us that direction so that we don't spend the rest of our life just grieving and suffering. It's important for us all to know that we are all spiritual beings on our earthly experience, and for us to stop our journey, our life journey, is not what we came here to do. We came here to learn and to grow. And for whatever reason, this person has left your life, or this place has left your life, in the case of redundancy, it's a growing thing for you. And it's so beautiful. And it's really interesting. I'm working with a young man at the moment. He's 40, but, you know, compared to me, he's young. And he has been he's been depressed for probably about 8-10 years. And he's at the stage, he was having not so ideal thoughts. And he reached out to me and he said, he did know Dan when Dan was alive. And he reached out to me and he says, I've been having these thoughts. And I went, what sort of thoughts? And he said, not ideal ones. And he said, and I was told to reach out to you. And I said, who told you to do that? And he says, I think it was Dan, but I don't really believe in that. But I think it was him, because I got a clear message, reach out to Mum, she will help you.
Wow.
And it is wow, because what we have done in working together in this 9-week program is, he said he has learnt more and healed more in those, and I think we're up to week 7 at the moment. So in those 7 weeks, he says, I have learnt more and healed more than I have from going to any of the usual places to assist me with my depression. And I just went, wow. And he says, no. He says, you really understand loss. And he says, and I just find it so interesting that the people don't understand it as much. And I said, it comes down sometimes to experience. And, you know, until you experience something, you only have a book intelligence about it. And sometimes you can never truly understand what it's about until you've experienced it. I can remember my daughter-in-law, when she had her first child, little Raphael, 3.5 years ago, and she's a physiotherapist working in a hospital, and she had a cesarean, and she said, oh, my God, I have been so mean to my past patients. I cannot believe the pain they have been going through. I've always thought they were faking it. And I just thought,
oh my gosh.
I know, it's just so true. Until we have firsthand experience, we truly do not understand as much as when, you know, through having book intelligence. It's a good analogy. She might not be happy with me sharing that, but you know.
Well, as a mum who's had 2 C-sections, I can tell you it does hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've had 2 and a hysterectomy, so, yes, I know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So let's go back to step 1, where you say stop. Do you find that people struggle to do that very first step because it's confronting, like it means they need to examine their life?
Yeah. It's confronting, but it's also, Carmen, really interesting is, you know, as I said earlier, and you may not have picked it up, is because we don't know what to do and we've been so good at doing it, we go into avoidance. We go into shoving it down with whatever means possible. And if you just look around the world, most of our socially accepted behaviours, when done to excess, are avoidance tactics. You know, food, alcohol, drugs, anger, isolation, working too much, social media, shopping. We even call it retail therapy. And, you know, too much exercise, too much sex, you know, or too little of either of them. They're avoidance, avoidance, avoidance. And it's really important for us. That's what the stopping is so hard, because we're so into these are my habits, good, bad, whatever, and this is who I am, as opposed to going, this is who I have become because of what has happened in my past life. And, you know, in my previous life.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really important for us to go, what am I running from? And that's why it's so hard to stop, because most people are not comfortable within their own skin. And I heard this saying very, very early on in my journey, you know, after corporate, and it really resonated so strongly with me. And it was Robert Holden who said it, who's a UK really amazing coach. And he actually said, if you feel there is something missing in your life, maybe that something is you.
Wow.
Yeah. And it really hit home and I went, you're so right. And the number one loss event that we all will experience in some form is loss of identity. Now we come into this world perfect, right? And through the growing phases through our foundational years, we slowly lose a little bit of us. Don't do that. Don't act like that. Don't be that person. Don't. You want to get ahead in corporate? Don't do that. Don't speak that way. Don't dress that way. Don't do this. So we slowly lose ourselves to the point that we think the person who we are is our authentic self. Inside of us, we have this little drum beating, and I know I had it in my corporate. I was very unfulfilled, but I never realized it because I was using all these, you know, unhealthy habits. And I, you know, you have this drum sort of beating. When are you going to love your life? When are you going to love your life? When are you going to love your life? When are you going to do what you love? When are you going to get on purpose? When are you going to do this? And it's constantly drumming inside of you. But it's like, I don't know who, I don't know how to do that. For for probably about a year, 18 months, I struggled with not having my corporate identity. In my corporate identity, I had a master's degree of accounting behind me. I had a CPA status. I had all of these credentials that automatically gave me that person, okay? And then, of course, I did a coaching course, but that didn't give me, you know, the persona that I felt I required. And to be quite honest, it's only through the hours, and as we know, you know, the 10,000 hours and all that sort of stuff, which gives you the experience. But the experience of actually living through something is worth so much. Yeah. And, you know, I haven't been through a divorce. I've been married for 44 years, but I understand. And I have seen so many of my friends, you know, on their second, third marriages, and I've been to so many weddings of their children, and their children, the bride or the groom, are in angst over the fact that their parents are going to be in the same room, even though they've been divorced for 30 years. And you think, isn't this interesting? Divorce doesn't have to be this way. It can be amicable. Yeah. And if they walk this five-step gift of loss process, it can be amicable, because what they do in the process is they get rid of that emotional charge. So they come to a point where they can be together, they can honour and respect each other, they don't have to live together again, but they can come together and go, you know, together we created these amazing children. And, you know, I want to acknowledge that. But, you know, we're better off when we're not together. But it's so easy to do that. You can get rid of the emotional charge. And that is one of my huge goals, is for people to realise you can have that amicable divorce. It doesn't have to be so acrimonious.
Something that you often hear when someone's grieving, or, you know, they've suffered a big loss in their life, is that it gets easier with time. Do you think that is true?
I think with time you start to heal yourself. Now, time, it doesn't have to take a lot of time. I guess you come to acceptance. This is what it is. They might not like it, but they have accepted it, that this is my way forward. So, but when you go through this journey of completing the relationship, it doesn't have to wait for a huge amount of time. You know, I still have sadness. Dan passed away 11 years ago. I still have sadness. You know, his brother, his twin brother and his older brother are married with children and, you know, both got successful businesses. And, you know, that's the life that Dan wanted. But it wasn't meant for him. I know that Dan's journey was to get me out of corporate and to get me into what I'm doing now, because this is how I can make a huge difference in the world. And, you know, and I honestly believe if I stayed in corporate, I would be not very healthy at all. I probably would have had type 2 diabetes, a heart attack, a stroke. That's what, you know, a lot of my sisters and parents went through, and I probably would have been heading exactly the same way. But I got to deep dive into me and to realize how important you are in your life. And that's the thing about this process is you honour all of your relationships, but more importantly, you honour yourself.
Mm.
And when you honour yourself, in doing that, you automatically up-level all of your relationships, which is an amazing place to be in.
So true. And do you think that you had this, I guess, tenacity to help people and to work on yourself spiritually and everything before Dan passed away? When you were working in corporate, did you feel like you were a creative person who
No.
likes to work with people or anything like that? Or is it something that only emerged after,
Okay.
after Dan's loss, your loss?
I always had a spiritual side of me, even though I was brought up Catholic. I always had a spiritual side. I'm not very religious, but I am very much, I've always had that spiritual side. And that what happened though, the more and more I got into corporate, the more and more I would not suffer fools lightly. And I was just why can't you just do your job? You know, why do you have to bring all these farmers to work? All that sort of stuff, which is why I've created a program for corporates. but then the more that I got into the journey into me, the more I started creating the Gift of Loss program and working with individuals, the more I actually went, oh my God, how different would have I been if I understood people the way I do now when I was in that corporate space? How different would have the workplace been? How different would have our practices been? And how much more healthier would have everyone been, you know, the people mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually? How different would have our team environment be? And I also know that, you know, your people and your profits are connected. I never got that when I was a CFO. I know how to make profits. I know how to do everything. But it was normally at the expense of the people. Whereas when you embrace your people and you really do treat them as your greatest asset, that's where you really do reap the rewards of ensuring that, you know, your people are thriving in all areas of their life. You also have your purpose thriving, and of course your profits are thriving. So yeah, no, it's been a journey for me. And a journey that I, you know, a lot of what I teach, I firmly believe we should be taught in high school. Would we have valued it? Maybe not. But it would be something, it'd be like that, you know, that maths problem that you learned in high school, and you every now and then you go, oh, what was that formula again? How do I do it? And then you'll look it up. And that's what I feel this would be if we're taught it at a young age, to go, oh, that's right, this is what I do now. Okay, if I follow these five steps, right. Sure, I'll still have sadness, but I won't be grieving and suffering, and I won't be in avoidance. You know, it's the avoidance that brings us all down. And you know, this person that I mentioned before that I'm working with, he's, you know, his tactics, he was a big gambler. And he said, since he's been working with me, he says, I have no desire to gamble. He says, you've really helped me to understand, you know, to create that better future. You know, that's what I needed. I needed to have because part of the process, and one of the first things we do is I ask them, what does success mean to you? And most people never answer that question. Most people take on someone else's definition. So that's when we start, and I purposely do it when we start so we have a line in the sand, and they do it at the end again, and their answers will be different. And they'll be more honest, but they'll also know that, you know, part of it, we do a visualization. Where will you be in 2 years? And you future visualize. So you actually writing the script as though it's 2 years on, and you're writing it in the present. And he said when he did that and what he came up with, he said, I haven't gambled since, because you gave me that future scripting of who I want to be. And I'll never get there if I continue wasting this money. It's so powerful. And it's because that's what it's about. And that's why I'm not a grief counselor. I'm a life counselor. I'm helping you to see that better everyday life. And yes, I use the loss as probably the line in the sand for you to come and seek that better way of life. But we don't have to grieve and suffer as much as we do. Some people feel if I'm not grieving and suffering, I didn't love them enough. And that's, you know, something for you to work through, because it's just a belief. Because, you know, the amount of tears you cry has got nothing to do with how much you love them.
No. And would that person that you lost want you to be?
Exactly. And that's what I say. Like, they've gone on to their next adventure. And I read this amazing book, you know, 10 years before Dan passed in 2001. It was written by Sylvia Brown. It's called Life on the Other Side. And she was a medium. She was even a channeler. And through her guides on the other side, she wrote this book about what we do before we come down here, what we do, you know, how we plan our life. And sure, we have free wills. We don't always, you know, have the life as according to that plan. And then what we do when we go back. And it was like, oh, my God, it was the best thing. When Dan passed 10 years later, I bought, I think, 10, 20 copies of it, and I handed it out to people, because it was such a sudden death. You know, we thought a healthy 27-year-old had gone out the night before. So a lot of people weren't coping. So I gave them this book and I said, look, we have an insight into what Dan's going through. And it was really good, and it was really comforting. Whether you believe it or not, it doesn't really matter. I have to tell you, it is really comforting to know that they've gone on to their next adventure, and that's what they're doing. And you're so right, Carmen. They don't want you grieving and suffering.
Mm.
They want you to live your life, because that's why you came here, to live your life.
And speaking of books, you've published many books now. How many have you got under your belt?
Okay, I have 5 paperbacks, 4 gratitude journals, and numerous ebooks.
Amazing.
It is amazing. I thought I had one book in me when I was in my corporate life. Wasn't ever really sure if I was ever going to write it. That was my 3rd book. But I love writing. But then, as I said, I have Dan on the other side, and he does feed me with so much stuff, so much guidance. And that's another thing, you know, my intuition, my gut feeling, my awareness of perceptions and awareness of the world and the messages that we all have that most of us never see. We are so guided and so looked after. That has really increased over the past 11 years, and I'm really grateful for it. And to answer your question about me being creative when I was in my corporate life, no, I was not. I was definitely not. If anyone had said you're a creative person, I would have gone, I don't think so. But there was one thing in me that really got me through was, and this is what I did in my corporate life, I was always looking for that better way. You know, if I was doing a task which really annoyed me, I have a very short span, or a Gemini, I get bored very quickly. So if I was doing a task that really would annoy me, I would always, what's a better way? What's a better way? What's a better way? And I feel that's what I took with me when I left corporate and went on this path. It was like, I need to find a better way, because it's not working, and people are suffering, and they don't need to suffer. And that's truly, I guess, the essence of what got me to create that better way, that more loving way.
Well, you're quite amazing, because I think I read in an article that you fell pregnant at 16, and that was what you wanted your initial book to be about. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
So, I mean, so many people have different ideas about teenage pregnancies and what that person's life would look like. And you built up a very successful corporate career. How difficult was it as a young woman with a baby to...
I didn't have the baby. I had the baby, but I adopted her out.
Wow.
And so that in itself has been a very long journey. She has been in my life, thankfully, since 2001, but it's only in the last few years that we've really come into a loving relationship. As you can imagine, you know, the thing about adoption and the rhetoric around adoption is all they focus on is what's been gained, you know, what's been gained for the adoptive parents, what's been gained for the child. They do not recognize the fact that adoption starts with loss, and it is suffered by both the birth parents and also the child and their child. And it's not easy, and it took us a long time to even recognize that. that, you know, we did start with loss and the trauma that I have caused her through ignorance. And I like to think that the adoption industry were ignorant. You know, Julia Gillard in 2013, when she was Prime Minister, she delivered a national adoption apology speech. And it's amazing the things that she talks about and the things that she goes through, and recognizing that, you know, as much as I've always owned my choice to adopt her out, I, at the end of the day, it wasn't even my choice. I was coerced into it. I was given very little choice, which is really, really sad. Because, you know, and but she's had a great life. You know, she, the adoption promise of a better life for her has certainly come. I've met a lot of adoptees who were not as fortunate as what she was. They have suffered through their adoptive parents. But it's, you know, we're in a good space now. And but it took us a long time to get here because it, we both required to heal ourselves first. You know, let's face it. What loving mother would carry a child for 42 weeks, give birth to her, leave her in a hospital for 6 weeks with no special cuddles, and then give her away to strangers? Takes a lot of healing.
That's tough. How were you reunited again?
So the adoption laws changed in the early 90s, and I always thought, well, you know, I have no right to be in her life. I relinquished her. So they changed in the early 90s and you could put your name on to register if you wanted to connect. And I did that and then nothing happened. And then I read an article in late 95 that stated that most adoptees will not look for their birth parents because they feel they've been rejected once and they don't want to be rejected a second time. So after reading that, I went, I've got to find her. I've got to tell her that I've always thought about her. I've always sent her love. I used to go to mediums to check in on her. That was my only way. When I grew up and I realized that the world wasn't as good as what I thought it was, especially some families, and you know what happens, I always worried about her because I always thought, oh my God, if the person, if the father is that way inclined and he has a natural child and an adopted child, they'll go for the adopted child first. So I would always send her love and I would always send her blessings, and I was always told that she was fine, and I was always told she would contact me at 21. And I read this article just before her 22nd birthday and I was like, she's not contacting me. So then I went searching, and it was really quite easy then, a lot easier than what it is now, because they changed the laws. I could apply for her adoptive birth certificate. I got that. I flew to Sydney. I got it. I very easily found an address because it listed a parent's name and everything, found an address, sent her a letter, and then she responded 5 years later.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. So she got, did she get the letter straight away?
She got the letter. She got the letter straight away, and she was really excited, but then all of these things sort of got in her pathway, and a lot of it were people. A lot of it were her young friends. She was like 22 and her friends like, why would you want to contact that horrible person? She gave you away. Your parents are the best. You've had the most amazing life. Why would you even consider being in contact with her? So she listened to a lot of those things. Her parents weren't very keen. They said, you contact her if you want to, but just never tell us about it. So that sort of put her a bit of a thing, and then she got engaged and she thought, well, I can't contact her because, you know, I would probably want her at the wedding and my parents will not cope if she's at the wedding, and yada, all these things got in the way. And then in 2000, she had her first child, who was a daughter, and she said it was the first time that she looked like someone in her life. She's really sad, isn't it? Because you don't think about that. And that's when she went, how did she give me away? I need to find her. I need to hear her story. And that's when she then, probably about when the girl was 6 months old, was when she contacted me. And, of course, you know, it's like you've been pregnant. All the medical questions, of course, when you're adopted, you don't have those answers. So that's another factor to get in contact. Hopefully it's not the only factor. But yeah, so we went on this journey for 17 years. It was a very hard relationship. We would go long periods without talking. But then we came to a stage where I was in the process of healing me, and I realized that I need to forgive me. I need to deep dive into me. And then we got to that crux where I sort of was like, well, we either stop seeing each other or we start creating a loving relationship where we start to listen to each other, we start to love each other, and we start to seek to understand each other. And that's where we're at now.
Wow. Wow, yeah, what a journey.
It is really good. It's been a long journey. She still has people in her life who are not very happy that she has a relationship with me, but they're working through it.
Mm. So it seems a common theme is that you've spent a lot of time working on yourself. Do you think that's something that people should focus more on in their lives?
Yep.
Like it seems so many of us just walk through life blindly and don't really take the time to, you know, work on self-development, I suppose. If someone wanted to start working on themselves more, what do you think is the first step to take? Is it awareness?
So, yes, I feel the sooner that we all start that journey, the better it is, because it's a journey, and it's a 12-inch journey that most of us will never, ever take, unfortunately, because it's a journey from your head to your heart, true authentic self, loving who you are in all areas of your life. And then realizing that you, apart from anyone else, deserves your love and blessings. Mm. And the more that you give that to yourself, the easier it is to give it to everyone else.
So true. That's a beautiful place to finish, I think. And if people want to find you, where's the best way that they can do so? Through your website?
So they can go to thechastoncentre.com. Now, Chaston is spelled chaston.com. Mm-hmm. And it's thechastoncentre.com, or they can email me at karen@karenchaston.com.au. It's really that simple, or through LinkedIn. My Facebook isn't working at the moment for some reason. So, LinkedIn, website, or email me.
Oh, thank you so much for your time, Karen, and for sharing your story. It's been a really moving podcast. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Oh, thank you. And it's time. It's never too late for everyone to take that 12-inch journey, and I highly recommend it, because you can really look at yourself in the mirror, and you can do, you know, that old Fonzie salute where you go, hey.
Yeah, that's right. It's never too late to work.
Never too late to give yourself that Fonzie salute. Never.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Committed Creative Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and learned at least one thing that will help you stay on the creative path.
If you liked it, please subscribe, as there's plenty more to come. And we'd love it if you could leave us a review if you found the podcast worthwhile. And if you didn't, please send us your feedback. We're all ears. You can check us out online at redplatypuscreative.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram at redplatypuscreative.
Remember, you are not alone in your creativity, and you can make money from your creative pursuits. See you next time when we speak to another creative mind that's committed to making their way work.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative.